Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to talk about a subject that is just absolutely perfect for this month. Why? Because one of my favorite holidays, Halloween, is going to be coming up in a few weeks, and my guest, who is Judica Iles, well, she is an expert on witches. And we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking about the publication she put together called The Wiser Field Guide to Witches. Now, this is just loaded with everything from A to Z, anything you may have been curious about, but were afraid to ask. Well, Judica isn't afraid to tackle it. Judica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna.
I had so much fun when I was going through this book because I don't know of very many places in the world where, quote-unquote, witches haven't existed. And, of course, there's so much mythology about so much of this, and so much of it is related to ancient history.
Yes,
now,
exactly.
You have been involved in this. She was ever since you were a little shaver. You just absolutely loved anything that had to do with witches. And you also have a column where it's about beauty secrets of the ancient Egyptians for a particular group that has an online magazine. You have written an encyclopedia about witchcraft.
Yes.
You live in New Jersey. I had to put that in there.
My claim
to fame. This is just too cool. I mean, right there, back there, close to Salem and all kinds of things.
I will be going to Salem at the end of the month, actually.
Really?
Yes, there is a big annual witches ball, and I'm going this year, so I'm very
excited. Oh, my goodness. How many people attend the witches ball?
I don't know. It's in the historic Hawthorne Hotel. It's near the House of the Seven Gables. It's beautiful.
Salem, oh, my goodness.
Salem,
that sounds absolutely awesome.
It's fabulous. Salem in October has become this incredible tourist destination. People come with their children. There are all sorts of museums, all sorts of events. It's incredibly crowded. It's like Mardi Gras in New Orleans. But very, very, very fun.
Well, there has been so much history. And I just think that when you get into various aspects of cultural history, you have so much that has evolved forward with a mythology attached that the real essence of whatever it represented is almost totally gone.
But I think you were absolutely right what you said before. Is, you know, if you think about what human beings have in common, rather than our differences, but what people have in common everywhere, one of the things is a fascination with witches. They may use different names, and they may dress up differently, but that sort of mythic witch is really known everywhere in the world. Which is
actually
just a phenomenal thing.
It really is. Actually, I think if you really get down to the bare bones of it, the association of witches with women primarily, now there are the male witches, but the ones that are designated typically are the females.
The stereotype,
and,
sure.
Yes, and in so many cultures, they are the ones, for the lack of a better term, were the shamans. They were involved with herbology. They
and
were
healers.
The ones that were looked at the healers.
Yes.
So give us a little background about how the term witch ended up being what it is today, with the connotation of the black peaked hat. Of course, I really like the cute witch in
too.
Wizard of Oz. I like that one. I like the flowing ball gown. You know, that's just me. With the crown on the head, that's me. The peaked witch head hat where you had your mole and warts on your nose or whatever else happened to be showing, and you look like something that should have been dipped in a vat of I don't know what and left behind forever. I mean, that just wasn't my, I like the cute ones. I don't like the ugly ones.
I've always liked the sort of pretty sexy ones. Those are the ones I've always liked.
Oh, you like the, oh yeah, with the sled up the side of the skirt. I get it. I got it.
Now, there are a whole genre of postcards from the beginning of the 20th century when postcards first came out, and it was a real momentous moment in the way people thought of witches. People sent a lot of, you know, it was the hallmark of its time. People sent all kinds of their Christmas postcards and Halloween postcards, but a lot of mythic imagery, and it was one of the times where the images of the witch changed. You have a genre that is known as the beautiful witch, and you have these Gibson girls, basically, dressed up in witches' clothing and casting spells and gazing into crystal balls, and they are so beautiful. And they cost, you know, if you have these postcards, they cost quite a pretty penny nowadays. They're antiques, but just absolutely beautiful, beautiful artwork. A lot of the symbols that we associate with witches, the peaked hat, the cauldron, the creatures that are associated, especially with witchcraft, a lot of these date back to very ancient fertility religions. And witches, that sort of dynamic female power, we don't have a word for it in English. You know, it's almost like a machismo, but a female, this sort of really creative, smart, defiant, you know, doesn't take guff from anyone. That is really the primordial beginnings of the witch. The word, the English word witch, derives from an Anglo-Saxon root word that is related to wise and wisdom. And witches were the wise people. They were the ones who knew the secrets. They knew which plants healed and which mushrooms you shouldn't eat and what times of the year were the best to go out and communicate with those who have passed from this realm. And they knew things that were not common knowledge. And eventually they became feared. And witches, I always, you know, people always want to know what's a witch. And there's so many ways to be a witch. It's a hard question to answer. But witches in general don't like being told what to do. There's a bit of an anti-authoritarian streak there. And I have always felt that that's why witches have received a bad reputation. Authority of all kinds, secular, religious. Witches make them nervous. Witches want to go ahead and take care of themselves and not answer to anyone. And that's
portrayal of the female.
Yeah.
In so many cultures.
They're not submissive.
Right. And that particular image, it's no wonder it ended up being something that they had us flying on broomsticks. I mean, you couldn't come up with anything better than that.
But there are all kinds of stereotypes from hundreds of years ago of who, you know, how will you identify a witch? And when you look at the old stereotypes, you appreciate how true this is. In Ireland, one of the stereotypes of a witch was that she would look a man in the eye. She didn't avert her gaze when spoken to.
Gee, every Irish lass would have been exactly that. Every single one of them were witches.
There you go.
The Irish women were known as the most independent women in the world because they had such a rough life that they really were very strong, very independent, and did not like being submissive. I'll never forget when I learned that about the Irish, and I thought, gee, I hope I have a few cups of that in my system somewhere. But, you know, you bring up an interesting cultural aspect. I was talking with a woman who is of Mexican background, and in her family there is a legend of the women who have been witches. And they were the ones that had psychic ability. They were the ones that could see things and perceive them. And I know this woman personally, and it was just a delight to chat with her. And, of course, I knew that we were going to be chatting. And she said that in her family, she had been told about the witches, but they were denoted as such because they could be healers.
Yeah.
And this was a positioning of honor in their cultural environment that she came from. And so she was, I think, in her early 20s when she finally accepted her intuitive gifts. And she said she doesn't go around telling people that she's a witch, but she's called that by members of her family, and she's respected. This is not a derogatory term. And what was really fun to hear was a story about her granddaughter. Her granddaughter came up to her one day and said, "Grandma, you're a witch." And she looked at her and she said, "Oh, really? And what makes you think I'm a witch?" She said, "Because I'm one, too."
Oh, that's really nice.
This, it was just amazing.
This
is her
family.
Granddaughter has talents like grandma's got. So they talk about things, and they both see people on the other side, and and they are able, you know, to communicate. But it took this lady a long time to be comfortable with it because she was raised in a very religious environment. Mm-hmm. But her mother told her not to be at war with it. She said, "Don't worry, you're going to keep a foot in both worlds and just let it be." But I thought I'd share that with you because that's from the Mexican culture. And it's absolutely fascinating.
It's absolutely international, too. You know, if you were to travel, if you had the opportunity to travel all over the world and you were looking for topics to discuss, witches.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is interested in witches, whether they approve of them, they disapprove of them, they admire them, they fear them. The reactions may be very different, but the fascination is, I think that's just human nature.
And you talk about the movies that came out like Harry Potter, and I know there was some group of people that said, "Oh, this is terrible, having all this stuff." But it was all about witches. Good ones, bad ones, and mediocre.
I find it very... Well, I'm always fascinated by how witches are portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always reading... You know, if basically if you put a witch in a book or a movie, a magazine, I'll read it, I'll buy it. But I'm always very surprised by people who object to Harry Potter. And I think that the people who object to Harry Potter as glorifying dark arts have never actually read the books. Because in Harry Potter, there's a certain amount of destiny to being a witch or a wizard. You don't have a choice. You receive the notice from Hogwarts, "Please come to the school," or you're doomed to be a muggle, and you don't. There's no choice in the matter. So... in a way, I don't know that it really encourages. It's a great story.
Mm-hmm. It really is, and I think they did an awesome job with the movie.
Yeah.
Personally, I just think they're absolutely magical.
Yes,
but
I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Oh, yeah, and then there's the series Bewitched that was done so many years ago with the twins.
It had its 40th anniversary just about a week or two ago. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
Isn't that an
interesting
coincidence?
Makes me feel very old.
Yes. So, you know, here you have all of these wonderful portrayals. I mentioned The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
You know, you've got the show, The Charmed, you know, Charmed, all of this. And it's absolutely amazing. Because usually in these modern-day portrayals, they owe up that you've got to be responsible for what you do, which I just think is fabulous.
Yes.
But you have in this book, The Wiser Field Guide to Witches, all kinds of sections here. You've got the famous, the infamous, and even the influential. And Agrippa was one that I found very interesting because this is a historical figure that wrote three books of occult philosophy, which you say is the cornerstone of Western occultism.
And now translated into English. for, you know, centuries. So that's a wonderful thing. We can read it for ourselves. He was a very heroic man also in his time. He was a healer.
Mm-hmm.
He was not a university-trained physician, but he was a very skilled healer. And when the plague came through Europe, often the true physicians left town. And he, in fact, recommended, they asked what was the best solution or cure for the plague, and he said, well, to get out of town as soon as you can. But but he stayed, and he mm-hmm. stayed, and he healed people and when he didn't have to. He was always in trouble with the Inquisition. He was always suspected of being a witch. He was called in at one point to judge a witch trial. A young girl had been arrested, and the sole evidence against her was that her mother had been burned as a witch. And he said that wasn't sufficient. And they let the girl go because of him. And, you know, and unfortunately, at that point, the inquisitors turned around and said, well, you must be the witch. And he had to get out of town again very quickly. But he's a very, very interesting man. He is believed to have been one of, possibly one of the role models for Faust, for the fictional depiction of Faust, Dr. Faust.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about going to Salem. There's a witch's
yes.
ball coming up. You mention a woman that historically is quite famous because of the Salem witch trials.
Yes.
And that is such a good example of what hysteria does
mm-hmm.
when people want to have scapegoats. And these innocent people were killed, and they were...
people. Yeah,
you know, they were forced to acknowledge something that had no reality whatsoever.
Well, the interesting thing is that the people who confessed stayed in jail. It was the people who refused to confess
mm-hmm.
who were hung. But an aspect of Salem that is not discussed very much is the greed aspect. When they confessed to witchcraft, they lost their property.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody else, when somebody lost, somebody else gained.
Oh, of course, just like the Inquisition.
Yes.
Come up with something, and this is what we do, and then the lies, and finally things were found out because the horror of what really evolved just became too much for certain individuals. They said, we can't do this anymore. Awful stories.
There's a man named Giles Corey who's very famous. He's the only person in what is now the United States and the British colonies who was pressed to death, which they should not have done because it was already illegal in Britain. But you, at that time, you had to plead either innocent or guilty, and Giles Corey refused. If he was guilty, they would hang him, and if he one way or another, he would lose his property. And
mm-hmm.
it was very important for him that his children inherit his property. And so, as the method of attempting to force someone to plead one way or the other, they would put heavy weights on you, heavy stones. And they would just put a big weight on you and ask, do you want to plead now? And then you would answer, and, you know, and if you wouldn't answer, they would just keep putting weights on you. And Giles Corey very famously kept saying, more weight, more weight, more weight, until he died. And
mm-hmm.
if you ever go to the Wax Museum, they have a depiction of this in Salem. It's very, very moving.
Mm-hmm.
But he was determined not to lose his property.
Well, he didn't capitulate.
No, he did not.
And he challenged them.
Mm-hmm.
Sybil Leek is a woman who was very, very famous.
Yes.
She was born in Staffordshire, England, and she became so well known. Tell us about Sybil. She's mentioned in your book here.
I remember watching Sybil Leek on, I think, the Mike Douglas show when I was a kid. I cannot remember whether it was Mike Douglas or Merv Griffin. Sybil Leek was really the first celebrity witch. She had an antique store in England, and she, at a time when witches were sort of coming out of the broom closet there, became famous there. People besieged her store, and she decided to go to the United States on a vacation, but fell in love with it here. She was an astrologer. She came from a family of mediums and occultists. her on one side of her family, she was Russian, and her family had served the Czars. She knew H.G. Wells as a child, Aleister Crowley. They were all family friends. She was a very accomplished astrologer, a medium, a card reader, and an author. It's very disconcerting to me now that all her books are out of print because she was incredibly famous when I was a child, and I think that she's largely been forgotten. But at a time when no one else would admit to being a witch, that was the first line of her autobiography, I Am a Witch. And mm-hmm. It was a very brave thing to do at that time when there was no one else saying she was all alone.
Mm-hmm. So she was the first in the forefront and having a great time, not intimidated about it at all.
And she was very fun. She would come on television, and she was just sort of a lively woman, very funny, very charming. She really, in the same way that Samantha Stevens made people reconsider
mm-hmm.
who is a witch or what type of a person is a witch, she was like a grandma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could envision her giving you tea and cookies and you know, good tea and cookies, not poison tea and cookies.
So, not like the witch in Hansel and Gretel,
exactly.
As we so many of us grew up knowing about. Well, I know Halloween is coming up, and this is just such a fun subject, but I love the history that you put in here. And you give history of different cultures, like Baba Yaga.
Yeah,
and that is that is a Russian.
Yeah.
A Russian.
I grew up with Baba Yaga stories. Baba Yaga.
Oh, I
know. Baba Yaga lives in a deep birch forest in the Russian forest, and she has iron teeth and a brass leg. She doesn't fly in a broomstick. She flies inside a huge mortar and pestle, and she has a broom with which she sweeps away her traces so no one will know where she's been. And she lives in a house on giant chicken legs that moves. And you have to be very good with her because she can be a cannibal. And she's scary.
Ooh.
A lot of the stories about her are very scary. I really enjoyed them as a child. They're chillers for children. Because if you disappoint her, if you're lazy, then she'll eat you up. She'll put you in her oven and eat you up like Hansel and Gretel, except she's usually successful. People come to her for help for one reason or another, and she gives them tasks. And if you're, I always say that she likes Virgos. If you're hardworking and conscientious and respectful, and you don't run away from a challenge, she often rewards people.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very interesting stories.
Well, I think it's just a lot of fun, and it's entertaining. This book, The Wiser Field Guide to Witches, there's just so much information that you have in here, historical and otherwise, like the weird sisters that are in William Shakespeare's 17th century tragedy Macbeth, and this was written in 1605, for heaven's
mm-hmm.
sake. So you have the weird sisters, and then, of course, we've got the witches. I mentioned the one Wizard of Oz, and like I said, I like Glinda.
Yeah.
I just found the page on Glinda.
Yeah.
Of course, she looks so good. I mean, let me...
Billy Burke, wasn't
look
she
like.
Beautiful? Yeah.
Oh, she was gorgeous. I just absolutely fell in love with it.
The original version of that MGM movie, they wanted Gail Sondergaard to play the Wicked Witch of the West, but who was a very beautiful, glamorous Hollywood actress. And you can, if you go and find books in The Wizard of Oz, you'll find photos from the tests. People objected because they felt that a wicked witch couldn't be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And but then they hired Margaret Hamilton, and then they proceeded to make her even more grotesque to fulfill the stereotype of this grotesque, evil, horrible witch. When the film was debuted, they almost did their job too well. Children ran screaming from the theater.
Ah.
I mean, of course, the children back then probably were maybe a bit more sensitive than they are today. But at that time, children were terrified.
Well, she did such a good job as an actress.
Oh.
She was very believable. She really was.
She's also on the Addams Family on the television show. She plays Morticia's mother.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff. And, of course, in your book, you talk about witches' animals. You've got stories, again, of different cultures that are there. But what do we usually see at Halloween? We see the bats, the spider web, the cats. And there's just all kinds of creepy critters. And here in the Pacific Northwest, I had to chuckle. Somebody came up to the front door and said, well, you're getting in the spirit early. I said, what do you mean? They said, look over to your right. And here was this humongous spider web.
Wow.
And this big garden spider had done just a magnificent job. I think spider webs are just gorgeous anyway.
They're beautiful.
But I looked at that and I went, well, I don't have to worry about decorating that corner, do I?
Absolutely.
But this is something, I mean, I was out walking my Scotties and I'm seeing people decorating their houses now.
I love Scotties.
The spider webs, the pumpkins that are out, the spooky white stuff, ethereal-looking stuff that they have there that kids might have to walk through. Haunted houses are being put together everywhere.
It's really
it's
a wonderful season.
It's a wonderful time.
Yeah, it
is. It's a wonderful time of the year, and it's cold and crisp, and you're going to shiver anyway, especially here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm not in Florida where you're going to have the balmy temps, but it is just, it's delightful, and people really get into it, and the kids have a ball, and the adults, I think, have even more fun than the kids.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, do you have a website? Because you have written a number of books. You have done a lot of research with this. In fact, you've got internet sources, books that you recommend to people if they'd like to do more research on their own about witches. What's your website?
www. It's my name. JUDIKAILLES.com.
Well, there you have it. If you're interested in the history of the Bubbling Cauldron, fascinating stories about real people that were given labels and what they did, and you know what's so amazing is that they love to learn. Every one of these people that she has written about usually went against the common denominator of learning and they really became the individuals. They were the ones that dared to be different. So this book has a lot to offer, and I love the cover. It's got a witch on a flying broom that's standing in front of a toll booth that charges 30 cents.
Yeah.
That had to be an old picture of an old
toll
booth.
A couple years ago from Illinois.
Tollway. My goodness, where do they just charge 30 cents for tolls? Here in the Pacific Northwest, it's $3, $4, $5.
Oh, yeah, here too.
Yes, so I think that is so great. Whoever did the photography for the cover just absolutely did a great job. And I thought, if you had a broom, you wouldn't need to pay a toll. That just doesn't work. So you
have
a law-abiding
witch.
Oh, she's a law-abiding witch. I got it. Okay. You can study the Witch's Travel Guide to visit sacred sites. I mean, she's got so many goodies that you can check out. Have fun with this. The Wiser Field Guide to Witches. Go to Judika Isles' website. It's JUDIKAILLES.com. It's wonderful. Judika, it's been a delight.
Thank you
as a guest. We have a few seconds here before we take a break. Do you have something you'd like to say to my audience regarding?
Trick or treat.
Fair enough. Trick or treat. How do you want it? Okay. Gee whiz, this is Judika. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much
Thank
for being
so
with
much,
me
Thank you so much, Donna.
And you have a wonderful Halloween.
You too.
And
bye-bye.
Rest of the year. Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we've got a lot of good things to share with you, including, well, maybe a recipe that you might enjoy. The weather's getting cool, and, let me see what I can dig up for you. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Toll-free telephone number to call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. It is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you when you call in is your first name or your initial. Then sit back, relax, and let me share with you what it is I perceive, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. That's how it's done. Now, a quick comment. I do want to let those of you know who are in Alaska. I'm coming into Fairbanks. I'll be broadcasting from there tomorrow. I'll be in Anchorage on Thursday and Friday, and I'll be broadcasting from there. So if anyone listening in Alaska wants to have some private time with me, that will be possible. Call my office number at 800-872-8852. Also, I'm going to be going to New York City, and I will be available for private sessions. I'm doing an appearance with the National Publicity Summit interviewing 100 authors who will, many of them, be on the show in the coming months. So I am available, again, for private sessions with people. I've got a real tight time frame there. So if you're in New York City and you want to meet with me, call me at my office, 800-872-8852. Well, I wanted to share some tips regarding finding jobs. So many times, depending on where you are in the country, there is a real challenge. And I've known people that have, I've talked with them on some of the flights I've been on that have gone into other states for work because it was necessary. Wherever they were living just did not have anything available for them to do. Well, if you look at history, that's not really unusual. During the time of the Depression, when things were so bad and so much of the American workforce just had no means of supporting themselves, millions of people were affected, and they would go where the jobs were. And whether it was building a dam like the Hoover Dam, or it was doing road construction work, or coming out into different areas on the West Coast, wherever it happened to be, it didn't make any difference. People went where the work was located. And that is what is happening today. And there's so many areas of industry that are relocating to different environments for whatever reasons. Could be economic, it could be a number of different things. Whatever it is, people will follow. And a lot of industries are disappearing because they are no longer needed. They are obsolete, or they have been replaced by a level of technology that no longer requires a lot of people to be involved in whatever that industry used to do. Now, there are at this time about 50,000, this just is mind-boggling to me. It took me a while to wrap my mind around this. About 50,000 job-related websites just in the United States. Now, Fortune magazine put this information out, and they picked six specific sites, and they said you can have a curator's guide to job-related content, so you don't have to make your job search any more difficult than it already is. And I thought, well, if you hadn't come across this kind of information, I'd share it with you today because it might be valuable to you. The first one that the company, the magazine Fortune related to was the Riley Guide at RileyGuide.com. That's R-I-L-E-Y, guide, at RileyGuide.com. And then the second one is the Aggregator's Smart Brief on Your Career and Smart Brief on Leadership at SmartBrief.com. And then you've got Quintessential Careers at QuintCareers.com. That's Q-U-I-N-T, careers.com. And then there's the Careers page at the Cuyahoga County Public Library, and you can go to the cuyahogalibrary.org/careerexpert.aspx. Let me spell that out for you. cuyahogalibrary.org/careerexpert.aspx. Also, the Harvard Business Review has blogs. And there's a blog that was recommended highly, Peter Bregman's, and this is how you reach it, blogs.hbr.org, blogs.hbr.org. And then the last one of the top six, Rise Smart's 100 Top Career Blogs in English. It's calculated according to seven metrics. Now, this is a long one. It's risesmart.com/blog/career100/. I told you it was a long one. So let me repeat it. risesmart.com/risesmart/blog/career100/. So those are just some suggestions. And in your local area, whenever you're looking for work, keep in mind that maybe you have a particular interest. Let's say you would like to become an expert in a culinary field. Well, maybe you'll find an apprenticeship positioning or similar, something similar that would enable you to start at a level where you get some practical learning and then be able to combine it with school or just get involved with a business environment that allows you to learn things from the ground level up. And this is something that can become very, very valuable to you, whether you're a mechanic, someone, again, that loves the culinary arts, the hospitality industry, medicine. It doesn't make any difference, taking care of animals. There are so many ways of doing things that the more you can associate with the environment you love, the better off you're going to be. It's just something that will bring about an evolution into that environment, economic environment that you want to be a part of, and at the same time, you'll acquire skills. It's something that really does make a lot of sense, especially if you're a younger person, but even if you're a more mature individual. If you're a mature individual, you have an advantage in a sense because maybe you're bringing skills to that business that they would not otherwise have the opportunity to utilize. So remember, you're not a label. You can do a lot of different things. And if you are looking for work, don't be afraid to explore the arenas you really have interests in because it can make such a difference for you. And this is something else that I was just amazed about. There's a LucyPhone.com. Now, have you ever heard of it? I hadn't heard of it. There's a lot of things I haven't heard of. And they say if you are finding that you're spending a lot of time on hold with maybe certain businesses, service departments, etc. You can go to lucyphone.com and find or type in the customer service number that you need, and Lucyphone will connect you, wait to be put on hold, and then hang up. Now, what happens when you do this? Well, the service will call you back when someone picks up. It's a phone tag the way that we would never imagine it could be. So they electronically are made aware of the fact that you have called them, and then they call you back. It's a unique type of a message service. I thought, what are they going to come up with next? Absolutely amazing, I think. It's just absolutely amazing. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I mentioned that I was going to share a recipe with you, and I want to talk a little bit about food today. I have got the most wonderful story to share with you about a gourmet chef, and he ended up doing something he never in a million years ever planned on. This is a guy that he just went all the way when it came to learning about how to become a phenomenal chef. But before we do that, if you got your pad of paper handy and pen, I want to give you a recipe for a soup. Now, this is really healthy, and it includes an ingredient that we here in the Pacific Northwest absolutely adore. What is that? It is the magnificent apple. That's right. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have such an array of apples. It's just magnificent. One of my favorite places to go to is Leavenworth, Washington, because there are orchards there like you wouldn't believe. And this time of the year, they have all kinds of festivals, Oktoberfest, and all kinds of things going on. But more than that, the farmers are bringing in the fruit from the orchards. And I'm telling you, you will never enjoy anything as much as you will a fresh apple, a pear, anything that has just come up out of the ground or off the tree. The flavor is just wonderful. They're not mealy, they're crisp, they're juicy, they're wonderfully flavorful. Well, this is a recipe, a soup, butternut squash and apple soup with cider cream. I could just smell the sweetness of the apples. Now, this is what it takes. You're going to need 5 tablespoons of unsalted butter. 5 tablespoons of unsalted butter. You're going to need 6 cups of peeled, seeded, cubed butternut squash. And the squash probably is going to be about 2 pounds, 2.5 pounds. And you want the cubes to be about a half inch. And that's going to take a little bit of time. 2 cups of chopped leeks, white and light green parts only. You don't want the dark green. You just want the white and the light green parts only. And that's, again, 2 cups. You want 1/2 cup of chopped carrots. 1/2 cup of chopped celery. You need 2 small Granny Smith apples, peeled, cored, chopped, and have an extra apple because you may want to use some of that apple for garnish. And I would say if your Granny Smiths are not that good, you might want to try a John Gold because they are very, very tart. But there is even a new apple that my husband's nephew told me about that I never heard about. So check those apples. If you don't have a Granny Smith in your area, in your store, then check for one that is going to have a real firm meat to it and also is going to have a tart flavor. You're going to need 1.5 teaspoons of dried thyme. 1.5 teaspoons of dried thyme. You're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of crumbled dried sage. Then you want 5 cups of chicken broth. 1.5 cups of apple cider, 1.5 cups of apple cider, 2/3 cup of sour cream, 2/3 cup of sour cream, and you're going to need a little bit of salt to taste, but use your ingredients first and then taste and then see if you need salt. 5 bacon slices, you want them cooked, drained, and crumbled. Now, this is how simple it is. It's absolutely wonderful. You put your butter in a large pan over medium-high heat. You want to add your cubed vegetables, chopped vegetables, your squash, your leeks, your carrots, and your celery. And you want to saute, stirring it for about 10 to 12 minutes. Then you're going to add your apples, your thyme, and your sage. Your broth, then, you add, and 1 cup of your apple cider. You're going to bring it to a simmer, not to a boil, but to a simmer. Then you want to cover it, and you want to put the heat down low. You cook until the vegetables and apples are really tender, and you stir it occasionally. Again, low heat, and that's going to take about 30 minutes. I think a crock pot is perfect for this kind of a recipe. Then you want to remove it from the heat and let it cool. And then you want to boil the remaining half a cup of cider in a small pan until it's reduced to a quarter of a cup. Now, that's going to take you about 5 minutes. Then you let that cool, and you take your sour cream, have it in a small bowl, and then you want to whisk into that sour cream the reduced apple cider. Now, once the soup has cooled enough, it doesn't have to be ice cold, just on the cool side, you want to puree your soup in batches in your blender or in your Cuisinart. And then once it's pureed, then you want to return it back to the pot, taste it, and if it needs a little salt, add it. And then you want to have and core your remaining apple, and you want to slice it thinly. And your soup should be drizzled with your cider sour cream, and you garnish it with a little bit of your crumbled, freshly cooked bacon and that sliced apple. Mmm, yum. Really good. Perfect for a brisk fall meal. Hearty, healthy, and delicious. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Gourmet Given is what we're going to be talking about. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, don't forget, if you have a story about the paranormal, I'd love to hear from you. I am trying to collect 100 stories from people that want to share them, and yours could be included. So the deadline is January 1, 2011, and I hope that you'll take the time to write out your story, whether it's about a ghost, a dream that came true, but that paranormal experience that had a big effect on you, your thinking, and your life. So I would very much, again, like to hear from you. Send it to donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. Tomorrow, I'll be broadcasting to you from Fairbanks, Alaska. Giorgio Toussakoulos is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about Twilight of the Gods. And then Kate Elton, we're going to be discussing how she, in writing the book A Resilient Life, will be able to tell us, if you know of anyone that has rheumatoid arthritis, how they can do more with their lives than they ever imagined. Then we're going to be talking with a psychic, David Elliott, on Thursday, and his new book called Healing. Very well done, And David is a repeat guest on the show. He's just a fine man. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about The Idiot's Guide to Identity Theft. Mari Frank is going to be my guest. So we've got a great lineup of people. And if you want to find out who the upcoming guests are, just go into bbsradio.com, Station 1, The Donna Sebo Show, and you'll be able to find out. When you just tap right next to The Donna Sebo Show, you'll find the information on show information, and by golly, you'll get all of the guests that are upcoming, and you will know exactly what is going to be talked about on the day. So anyway, that is the latest information that I have for you. I was going to share a story with you, and I will do it right now, about a chef, and his name is Tim. This man, gourmet French restaurant chef, he just absolutely loved his work. He was in Napa Valley, you know, one of the best cities in the world that you possibly could be in for fine food, fine wines, and he just was enjoying himself immensely. This was a dream come true, and he just said, this is awesome. Well, he had a friend that he had gone to school with. His name was Dave, and he crossed paths with Tim. And Dave had taken a much different route. Even though he had gone to culinary school, he had ended up working for a shelter for the homeless. And he was involved very much in making it very, very successful. And it was the Bay Area Rescue Mission in Richmond, California. So it was maybe 45 minutes to an hour from where Napa Valley is. And Dave proposed something to Tim. He said, I really would like to have you do a cooking school at my rescue mission. Well, how many people would get a proposal like that? What would you say if someone, if you were a skilled culinary chef working in a five-star environment, what do you think your response would be? Well, Tim really didn't know what to do with it, because the kind of people he would have as students would be drug addicts. And Dave said, I feel you are the person. I even talked to your mom about this, Tim, and I really think you are the person that could make this culinary school really, really work. But Tim just couldn't wrap his mind about this. He said, I don't think it's the job for me. And when he was thinking about this, he had started at the American Culinary Institute right after high school, and he said, this was my passion. This is what I wanted to do. He said, I lived for it. But as the days went by after the conversation he had with Dave and basically had told Dave that he wasn't interested, he said he just couldn't get the conversation out of his head. And he said, my mom and dad, they had heard about it, of course, because Dave had talked to mom quite a bit, and he said they thought it would just be fabulous for me to do. And he said, I don't know. I just don't know. And he said he just couldn't dump the words that Dave had put into his head. Well, he calls Dave up. And he decided to have a coffee with Dave. And Dave said, you know, I really think you're the guy for this. I can't ignore this. I just really think you're the guy. Why don't you come down to the rescue mission? See what you've got there and what we can do, and then give me your answer. So Tim said, okay, this would get him off my back anyway, so why don't I go down? He goes to the rescue mission. Well, it wasn't in the sweetest part of town, and he said there was nothing but stucco bungalows around it, chain link fences, and a lot of vacant lots. He said it was not inviting at all. And he notices that there's a forklift operating, and they've got crates of donated food. And he said, oh, boy, what is this place? This is nothing like the kitchen I'm used to cooking in. This has to be a tough environment that my friend Dave is working with. Well, Dave took him inside the kitchen area, And one of the first people that Tim encountered was a real scruffy character. And he said, "You don't look homeless to me." Well, do you know what? Something really moved Tim, and he decided, after he saw the people that were there waiting for the food, that he was going to do the work. It changed his life. And do you know, to this day, he is working, and he said, "It is amazing what we've been able to do to turn around people's lives." Gourmet chef, going to a rescue mission environment, teaching skills to those that are willing to learn. Who would have guessed? This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I know we're just about out of time here, and I'm so delighted you were able to join me. And remember, we're going to be talking about the gods tomorrow, so I hope you'll join us. You are magic. We all are. That should make you a happy person. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.